The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you, most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here for a Film Study short as we let the clock tick down towards opening night next Thursday. We are now currently on Wednesday, 8:28, recording this episode. A lot of things have happened today. Practice squad has been assigned. Other things have done. We'll be addressing a lot of that on Friday morning GM in terms of how things have played out. Some interest in Lawrence Guy, apparently. But now, we want to take a step away right now from this element of roster construction and talk instead about the draft a little bit. Joining me to do that is Brad McGowan. Brad, how you doing?
Ken, I'm doing great. I'm really excited for next Thursday.
Yeah, me too. I'm a little bit in dread of being 0-1, but the, like all times, really, I'm kind of more a worrywart as a fan. You find the little things that you that might go wrong, as opposed to that. It's the difference between being, I'm told, a helicopter pilot and a fixed wing pilot. Fixed wing pilots are very cavalier about things. Helicopter pilots can't afford to be. They worry about what is going to go wrong, because it often does, and then you're a lot less protected from your situation. Anyway, let's talk about the draft a little bit, and we're a few years out now on DaCosta taking over the reins. And one of the really nice things, but also one of the things that makes it difficult to compare between GMs, is the fact that these guys still sit next to each other as they have virtually every draft in Ravens history. Going back to the very first, where DaCosta was an area scout, I know, but he was still in the room. Tell me why you wanted to come on and talk in general about a change in draft philosophy.
Yeah. So, first, yeah, really excited for this season. When I messaged you about this topic, it was before final cuts had been made, and it looked likely or probable to likely that the Ravens might not keep their last four picks of this draft. Ali, Leary, Samak, and Kane were all squarely on the bubble. And many of us thought most of those guys would be cut. And that combined with the way the Ravens performed in the second half of the preseason got me thinking, did something change about the way we've built depth on this team? And are we approaching the draft differently in the later rounds? And so I thought, reach out to Ken. He'd be a great guy to discuss this with. And yeah, that's really the background here.
Okay. This is, by the way, I appreciate you unpacking this a little bit and going through your thought process and coming up with an episode. And you don't have to have 100% of the idea ready to go. That's something I'm going to say to somebody who wants to do any kind of short discussion with me. Come discuss it with me. If you think you've got an idea, kernel of an idea for a show, let's talk it through and let's work it out and see if there's an idea worth discussing. I always have time for a phone call, always have time for a discussion on Twitter. So contact me, please, if you're out there and you'd like to talk about something you're passionate about. Brad, I know, is always passionate about the draft. So, you know, one thing that the Ravens always had in their history, particularly in the early Ozzie era, was an incredible consistency in finding value in their first round pick.
Yeah, I mean, it's well documented that the first draft Ozzie conducted, he drafted Jonathan Ogden and Ray Lewis in the first round. And that's like hitting a grand slam in the bottom of the ninth of the World Series Game 7 in your first at bat. Like, you don't get many chances to hit one out of the park like that. And that was the bar that he set. And really, for the first handful of years that he led the club, they were really successful picking in the first round. Had a lot of very high picks in that first round, but
that helped.
You know, that definitely helps, but you got to nail those picks, and he really did that.
And he nailed Lewis at 26 and Reed at 24, which,
yes,
Baltimore will be forever grateful for that. And there have been some very similar picks in terms of the spots the Ravens have selected in really interspersed throughout Ravens history, honestly, but certainly in recent years as well, where the Ravens have been a consistent, fairly consistent playoff team. And they've had a lot of, you know, picks in the 20s for their first pick.
Correct. And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot about with roster building is you need, in order to really build an excellent team, you need a handful of blue chip guys that you can build a roster around. And so if you have Ray Lewis at middle linebacker, you can, you know, put an undrafted guy or a fourth round guy next to him, and you're going to have a successful defense because of the way Ray's presence upholds, you know, that linebacker, gets everyone else in line. And, you know, Ozzie was able to establish a roster with a number of core blue chip guys in those early years that sustained a lot of the roster for many years.
Right. That's a really interesting point, by the way. And it's something that we really ascribe value to with Lamar Jackson, that he's the rising tide that lifts all boats. He drives the entire running game by the fact that defenses have to account for him pretty much first. And, you know, having him makes everything more difficult on defense. It's one of the reasons why I don't pay a lot of heed, and I don't get into arguments with people on Twitter who want to talk about why Lamar Jackson is not as good as, you know, Josh Allen or Joe Burrow or somebody like that, and they start comparing passing statistics. Well, that just doesn't even begin to capture the greatness of Lamar Jackson. The greatness of Lamar Jackson is captured in the success of the offense overall and looking at who the other players have been. And there hasn't been a lot of really special offensive talent here outside of Jackson. They've been able to get by with, you know, some good talent, some very good talent, but a lot of not so great talent also on offense that has been made great by Lamar Jackson, particularly at the running back position.
Correct. And if you were to, one point that you've made many times on this podcast is the relative value. Well, I forget how you frame it, but the efficiency of the 2019 offense relative to the cap dollar spent on, yes, the offense was probably an all-time high. Mm-hmm.
And yeah, if you look, NFL all-time high.
Correct. Yeah. And if you were to do, you know, a roster evaluation and try to pick the blue chip players the Ravens have had on offense during Lamar's tenure, you could say Yonda at the tail end of his career and probably Stanley pre-injury. But outside of that,
Mark Andrews,
you know, Andrews has flirted as a top, you know, top three tight end in the league. So you could argue Mark Andrews, but outside of that, it's really been Lamar as the rising tide that's really lifted the rest of the team around him.
Yeah. And I think that's 100% true. I think but the point I was making, the reason why I don't unpack this is we ascribe that to Jackson. We, in some ways, we ascribe it to Lewis. Okay. But I don't really think people ascribe it to Ed Reed. But Ed Reed for sure made everybody's job a little bit easier who's playing underneath, okay, in terms, right, of what they're doing. We don't ascribe it at all to players like Chris McAllister and Starks, who were first-round picks. They were individual island players. And sure, they had a very real ability to make the other 10 versus 10 on the field an easier job for other players. But it wasn't like they were you know, lifting the play of everybody around them. We've already come to the point where we're ascribing that value to Roquan Smith. And it's basically said every time the weak side linebacker's name is mentioned, and it's said in this preseason when he doesn't even play at all because the run defense falls to what the hell, and people say it's all going to be better as soon as Roquan steps back on the field.
Right. And, you know, I know there's been a lot of hand-wringing and consternation about Mike McDonald leaving this offseason, and he certainly made a name for himself in Baltimore. But let's not forget, the first year he took over the role, the offense or the defense took a while to gel, and they didn't really take off until Roquan was traded for and inserted at middle linebacker full time. And then all of a sudden, and then, you know, you put Hamilton in the slot, all of a sudden the defense just takes off. And so while a lot of that success can certainly be attributed to McDonald getting his feet under him and, you know, really learning the nuance of calling and preparing a game, we still have Roquan Smith here. We still have Kyle Hamilton here. And so, you know, those are the two guys that the blue chip, truly tentpole guys on defense that we have that, you know, give us a lot of hope that regardless of how bad the run defense looked in the preseason, come regular season, it's going to be a different ball game.
Yeah, it is. It is definitely, you handicap preseason games 3-1 and you handicap regular season games 1-3. So they're in a better, they're definitely in a better position to do some positive things. It's, you know, one, we started this discussion by talking about the difference between the round one success, for example, or talking about the Aussies success in round one. Has DaCosta kept up with the tradition? And I don't think you need to make it all about round one, but just in the early rounds in general, relative to what Aussie was able to do. And I'll even go further with similar draft position.
This really kind of gets into the crux of what I wanted to talk about, Ken. And if you consider the drafts that DaCosta has had, and you look at really the first round, we could just highlight the first round. He's gotten a number of really solid players, and you could argue that he's gotten at least two blue chip players in Kyle Hamilton and Tyler Linderbaum in the same draft, no less. And then, you know, it's too early to tell on Zay and Nate, but they certainly have traits that could lead them to, you know, pretty high level players that are tentpole players on this team. And so just over his first six drafts, 2019 or five drafts. I mean, he hasn't really missed on a first round pick. It took Queen a little while to develop, but you know, he left in free agency this year with a big contract. He contributed really well his last 2 years. I think we had hoped Marquise Brown would be, maybe a little better impactful than he turned out to be, but you know, he's still, holds the rookie. No, was the rookie receiving record just broken by Zay, or I can't remember now, but I thought he was pretty impactful while he was here for what he was.
And they got something back for him that was significant. So if you count the fact that he effectively got most of a first round pick that was around 23 or 25, back in exchange for trading him, then I think you have to look at it and say, yeah, he really got value out of that player.
Right.
That's fabulous. Yeah.
Right. And the Ravens turned that player into Tyler Linderbaum, who in his second season all of a sudden looks like he's on a trajectory to be, you know, a top tier player at his position, which is a phenomenal.
Yeah. It's great that they drafted a great player. I'll separate what he got in terms of the actual value back from the actual player he drafted for it. Now you could, by the way, either is appropriate. If you want to toss in there that it's Tyler Linderbaum he got for him, then it really makes, you know, you got one draft pick and it's 3 years of Marquise Brown and 4 years out of Tyler Linderbaum. That really looks good. So, and it'll actually, yeah, I think it'll be four for certain out of Linderbaum. It's going to be hard for him to get a fifth year option, so it won't have the same value at center as it would if it were, say, a left tackle, but it still potentially could have a, could have tremendous value, and they could sign him early, which could be, you know, a little bit of additional divisible benefit. We're just going through a period right now where the Brandon Ayuk crapola is out there again, and the Ravens need a trade. You know, they need to start by giving away 1.5 testicles, but they also need to give away a first round pick, Bateman, and sign Ayuk to a $30 million a year contract. And yeah, it's just the idiocy of that is just all over Twitter. I just cannot stand it. It drives me up the wall to see this. And you know, as a season ticket holder, I'll just tell you this: it's incredibly frustrating to even think that there'd be an organization out there. And unfortunately, the Ravens are not that. They'd never make a trade like, they'd never like make a move like this, but that would mortgage the future to such a degree that would make it not worth it for me to go to games for a year. That's not the way I look at it. I want to go to the games every year, have a good chance every year to be in the playoffs, to make a deep run every year. And the Ravens, the way they're constructed, the way they do business, and the above market way in which they draft and they're smart about everything is basically putting them in a position to contend every year. They don't have to go all in on a consistent basis. They need to play small pot poker. And right, this is Brandon Ayuk thing just drives me up the frickin' wall.
Yeah, I don't feel as strongly about it as you. I think Ayuk is, I think he's a really incredible talent and one of the few, you know, pure press man beating X receivers that are in this league. But
let me stop you for 1 second, because I completely agree with everything you just said. Brandon Ayuk is probably a top 6 or 7 receiver in the entire National Football League. As such, he will deservingly set the market for salaries at wide receiver coming up. The problem is that the contract the Ravens will sign him to next will have approximately 0 surplus value to it. It will be a market value contract for his services. He will get any surplus value the Ravens get from it is going to be minimal. Okay. Right. It's going to be enormous. And it could really come up short. Okay. Now I would admit that Tyreek Hill may have outplayed the contract they give him. I don't know that he's outplayed yet the contract and all the draft capital they traded away, but he's outplayed the contract they gave him. So it's not impossible that he could do it, but I'm just saying you're giving away 3 different elements. You're giving away a draft pick, you're giving away a player, in this case in Bateman, who has surplus value in his contract right now because it was built on a reverse fax gate situation where he basically got his arm twisted into signing for less money than he would otherwise be worth on the open market.
Right, right. And for those that don't know what Ken is referring to with Faxgate, refers to Elvis Dumervil's agent not sending the fax in to Denver in time to qualify for whatever offer they were giving him. And
I think it was an opt-out on a contract or something.
Yeah, something. And yeah, Baltimore ends up signing him because the fax whole thing failed. Yeah. I agree with that, Ken. But I would say we could have made a similar argument when they traded for Roquan, that we were going to sign him to a max market-setting deal and we weren't going to get a lot of that benefit. We were going to trade a draft pick. And that has turned out tremendously. I don't think we regret that. I agree with you that I don't think for what Baltimore needs, I don't think it's worth it to make this deal, but I understand the sentiment for a player of Ayuk's caliber. But I want to bring this back to the discussion we were having, because I think this kind of leads into, you know, a point that I wanted to make about how many potential, you know, really tentpole players we might have on this roster. I know you're going to have a conversation about this, but you know, given some of the Lamar and some of the others, like I think the roster is really well set up for the future, even though, you know, we might have a potential change in draft strategy in the later rounds under EDC. And that's something we wanted to get into.
So in terms of cornerstone players, they're in pretty good shape. They have a lot of the big contracts. And by the way, that's another problem with going after a player like Ayuk, not to make this an Ayuk show, but how are you going to pay Tyron Lindebaum? How are you going to pay Hamilton? Those are big contracts coming up in the not too distant future, potentially both of them after this season. Okay, probably both of them after one more year, because either, well, Linderbaum's going to be harder to give him a fifth year option, but in Hamilton's case, a fifth year option is obvious and will be reasonably cheap. But in the case of Linderbaum, it'll be very expensive because it'll include the left tackle market in terms of what's right. going on, because all offensive linemen are grouped. So you don't want to, you might not want to pay that, which is going to force the contract to be signed a year earlier, probably after his third year to extend it. So the question is, where does that money come from? Because the Ravens are already right up against the cap next year. Now, it's not like they can't move some money around. They can move some money around, but they have a lot of money to move around. Right. And that's, you know, already that accounts for the fact that Ronnie Stanley is going to be gone.
Right. Yeah. It's really, I don't know the answer to that. I'll leave that to you and Voss to discuss on Friday morning GM, how you would handle that. But, you know, they're looking potentially after this season. Owe is in his, he's entering his fourth year. So he still has his fifth year next year. So they don't have to make a decision on him this offseason.
Yep. Or they do, because they can't really let him play out year five. He's playing year four now. They can't let him play out year five and hit free agency. They need to sign him at the latest, I guess, during the year, but probably before the year.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's one of the guys that, his underlying pass rush statistics are good. The results haven't been there, but by, you know, your reporting in camp, it looks like he could be poised for a breakout. So, you know, if he breaks out similar to how Matt Abike broke out last year, it'll be a good problem for the Ravens to have, but it might mean that they might not be able to get him back.
Right. That's the problem with being a team that drafts very well, is you're always put in this position. And I got to say, that is yet another reason why you don't go after a play and trade draft capital so that you have the privilege of signing a long-term deal with somebody like Brandon Ayuk. If you're constantly drafting to the point where you can't even sign all your own good players, which is exactly where this team is constantly, then if you're having to leaking talent through that methodology, take advantage of the damn compensatory draft pick system and don't go out and sign big time free agents that are not, you know, very specific. Or if you are going to sign free agents, sign a free agent, but don't pay additional draft capital to get the guy. Don't toss in players in the deal. Just sign the player.
Yeah. I think going back to the comparison between Ozzie and EDC from a draft perspective, I think one of the things I really appreciated about EDC's approach is his willingness to kind of, you know, he'll make a trade if he feels that's the best way. He'll sign a guy if he thinks that's the best way. And he's, you know, he'll draft and then he'll move on. And, he made obviously the Roquan trade, signed Marcus Williams, who, while he has been injured, when he's been on the field, he's looked great.
He's been terrific, yeah.
And, you know, I think his contract will kind of wind down, right, as they need to pay Hamilton. And they'll have to back the truck up to pay Hamilton, I imagine. He'll be wanting to be the highest paid at his position.
Didn't you know it's possible to get THC shipped right to your door? Mood delivers premium 100% federally legal THC directly to you. I'm talking about delicious high-potency gummies, top-shelf flower, home-baked cookies, vapes, anything you'd find at a dispensary, you can now order online and have it shipped quickly, discreetly, and conveniently right to your door. And every Mood product is made from pesticide-free cannabis grown on America's best small farms at prices that won't destroy your wallet. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code RAVENS. So head to mood.com/ravens, check out their online dispensary, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code RAVENS when you check out to save 20% on your first order.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and a watch or tab. also on them.
Service plan required for watch or tap. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app.
Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But he's probably top of the line of these guys coming up, I would think.
Yeah, he'll make more money than Linderbaum, I would guess. Linemen do make a lot of money. Safeties don't make a lot of money. But centers don't make a lot of money for linemen. And safeties don't make a lot of money for defensive backs, for certain. And strong safeties make less than free safeties. So right. It'll be exciting to see how it'll be interesting to see how Hamilton fits into that picture. But I'd say, yeah, he'll probably make a little more than Linderbaum.
Right. So, the way that I've just been thinking about the roster in the preseason, I think there was part of me coming into having this conversation with you where I was feeling discouraged that we weren't winning all our preseason games like we'd done the last 5 years and that we couldn't stop the run. But when I took the time to step back and look at some of the top-end talent the Ravens have accumulated – at tail end of Ozzie, Lamar was drafted under Ozzie, but really with EDC helming the team, like I feel really, really good about where the roster sits right now outside of who they're choosing to play in the offensive line.
There's a group of people in every city, by the way. There's a bunch of Fire Tomlin people in Pittsburgh. There's a bunch of Fire Harbaugh people, and they're an extremely vocal minority of Ravens fans that really want to get rid of an established head coach, that don't understand that it's something you aspire to have great assistant coaches come through and then move on. That's you derive the value while they're here and then they move on. If you've got a head coach that is consistently hiring in great people, has great succession planning within the organization, that's a good thing. If you're winning all the time, that's the ultimate test of it. You know, is it working out? But I think, yeah, there's always a group of people who want to fire the establishment person, and there are a bunch of Fire DaCosta people already, and they will always snipe at any bad pick DaCosta makes. Doesn't matter if it's a seventh round pick. Well, look what he got out of the Sanusi Kane pick. He barely made the team.
Right.
Come on, fire EDC. Yeah.
right. And I think part of why I went through this exercise is a lot of the dialogue online has been disappointment about, Devin Leary as an example, or disappointment that Dayton Wade didn't make the team. Meanwhile, we have Nate Wiggins over here not showing us anything that doesn't lead you to believe that he could be a future All-Pro. And that it pays far more dividends than whether or not Leary can be a competent backup in this league. And so I just wanted to refocus on the success of some of that top end decision making.
Yeah, I mean, that's 100% true. And you look at the draft picks in rounds. Well, I mean, your first round draft pick in a lot of years, it does depend on where you're drafting. But if you draft down in the 20s in particular, it could be, 55% of your total value of your draft. It can be 60% of the value of your draft. If you traded your second round pick, it can be a hell of a lot higher than that. So what the Ravens have been able to do consistently there is going to always define if they're really succeeding as an organization as well. The other way, I mean, you can win is you get guys in later rounds, and those guys are very underpaid for their first contract. See, the beauty of a fourth through seventh round pick is they only make about $3.5 million for those first four seasons in total. You can find players who will give you nothing on that. And you don't, by the way, you don't end up paying all 4 years for that player. You only end up paying usually a portion of that. But you also can find players who can end up giving you $30 million of value. If you're fortunate about it, Tavon Young, that kind of player. We don't think he's injured a little bit, so that's probably an overstatement, but he might have given the Ravens $15 million of value. Matt Judon certainly gave him $30 million worth of value in this first 4 years.
Right. Za'Darius Smith.
That's another good one. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, like we talked a little bit about this before, but it is though rare that you're going to get, you know, a tent pole or floor raiser guy in the later rounds on their first contract. If you want a guy that's going to raise the floor for everyone around them, that guy is generally going to be a top three pick. And that's exactly what Baltimore got with Lamar Jackson. So while relative to the rookie class, he made far more relative to the value in raising the floor of the team around him, he provided far more.
Obviously that's very true. And Lamar on his first contract, for example, including a fifth year option, made maybe $45 million. It's in that range. And his value over those years, I'm going to toss out a number that north of $200 million, I'd say, was his value for those years. Even though 2018 was good, but it wasn't tremendously impressive as a passer, then he has one of the greatest seasons of all time.
Right.
And then there were some injuries even in the years after that, but he was still great. I mean, right. I don't think $200 million is too high a number. That 2019 season alone, in particular, you could make an easy case based on the efficiency of the offense that season might have been worth 80, 90, 100 million.
We just had a conversation earlier just about how they didn't really have other blue chip players around him, and he's won 75% of his regular season games, even subtracting last year's 13-4 season.
Yeah, he hasn't done it in the manner that people think. Oh, he's just a game manager. Oh, he just does. It's not what he is at all. I mean, he's a Ferrari that takes the team out to enormous leads at halftime, and he's rarely ever had to come back in the fourth quarter. There have been a couple instances, but it's one of the criticisms. Orange, well, look at his number of fourth quarter comeback wins. He's hardly had it. Well, he's hardly ever trailed. You know, how many times has he ever trailed entering the fourth quarter?
Right. Yeah, people always they just find reasons to be disappointed or underwhelmed, and all I wanted to do is recenter around like what an exciting roster we have right now going into the season. You know, you mentioned being a worried about next Thursday. I will share that the last time the Ravens opened the season on my birthday was the year after the Super Bowl win in Denver, okay, when Peyton Manning threw for 7 touchdowns. So they owe me a win against a championship quarterback on my birthday next Thursday.
I remember Kevin Burns' article that next day was, well, comma, that sucked.
pretty
awful game.
Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of the top rounds, you're satisfied without going in any kind of detailed analysis that DaCosta is still operating on a high level in terms of hitting on those early picks. How about in rounds 4 through 7? Are you as convinced that things have gone well? I think there have been some very questionable picks in those rounds. I'm more concerned about when a player is picked and it almost seems like a commitment to a position, like a need pick, as opposed to other value picks existing in that point, as I would see it. And that's I thought there was a lot of that, by the way, in the 2024 draft.
Yeah. I mean, I think from my vantage point, it does seem that a lot of the later round picks just don't really make a ton of sense. I mean, we're still talking about the Ben Mason pick.
Yep.
Relative to the potential value you might get out of a pick like that.
Caillou Kelly.
You know, again, Devin Leary, not to make this a session, you know, demeaning Devin Leary, but it was just a really curious pick when other guys are on the board that can fill better positions of need. I guess, you know, if he keeps hitting those higher round picks, do what you want in the later rounds. It just does seem like a bit curious.
Yeah.
To be fair, he does have some hits. You know, Isaiah Likely has been terrific. Tylan Wallace has provided a lot of value. You know, Tavius Robinson seems like a keeper. Voorhees last year, if he can, you know, grow and mature.
Yeah, I mean, that was a outstanding gamble And I'm looking at his play and scoring it week by week, and I'm shaking my head at, you know, the reduced chance of him really working out, because I thought of the three changes, he'd be the one that would.
Right. Now we're talking about Voorhees. I named a number of players, but just so everyone's clear.
Yeah, we're talking about Voorhees. But I still think it is a great gamble. And right. If it doesn't work out in 2024, I think it still might work out in 2025 through 27, because he'll be here for all those years.
Right.
So I think there's still a good chance. And if you look back, there have been some hits and there have been some misses. I hate the lottery ticket thing, as you know. World Series of Poker entries is much better. DaCosta is better at picking in any round, but certainly, you know, in the late rounds as well. I'm a little frustrated that I think some of the changes made to college football have actually hurt DaCosta's ability in terms of selecting small school talent. I think the transfer portal changes, the NIL money have made it more difficult for players to hide themselves for 4 years to the Ravens' benefit at a small school. And this has ended up meaning that the Ravens now have more competition for players that they would have had a better shot at. I mean, there's no way a player like Bart Scott gets through to the Ravens under the current system of NIL and transfer, and also the additional COVID years. Because now, you know, right. if you don't have a great senior season, well, no problem, play another. Right. I think so. Right.
That makes the all of that circumstance, it makes the Wiggins pick stand out a little more, just given how young he is. Today's his birthday. Happy birthday, yep. Nate. He just turned 21.
Yep.
You know, I realized this preseason that Kyle Hamilton just turned 23. And the ability to hit on guys that are 20, 21, 22 is, again, a lot more value than drafting a guy that's, say, 24. You just have so much more longevity with that player potentially if they pan out.
Right. I mean, you have all the frictions which can help keep the player there. The combination of the fifth year option, having the franchise tag that effectively was the major reason Lamar was able to be signed in the end, make it very likely that you can keep a player that is a star player that you want to ascribe the money to without him just choosing to be out of Baltimore because he doesn't want to play here. Right. There really isn't the option for a player to do that in an economically responsible way to himself. He's got to really kind of blast his own foot off and demand a trade and, you know, create less value in the process for himself for that to work out.
Right. Right.
All right. So I guess we won't go into a lot of detail on round seven. I kind of want to bring this to a close since we're, you know, this is supposed to be a short episode, but is there anything else about the change in the two main draft executors that you would point to? This has really changed about the way the Ravens do things.
I the only thing that I can think of is that it seems the sentiment around the team is that they are willing to be a little more aggressive in the draft. They talk more about trading up, but they haven't done that. And so not really. I mean, Ozzie's still sitting right next to EDC. If anything, it just seems like more of the same. And we've hit on some, you know, the guys we've taken recently seem to really be on the right trajectory, but you can't predict that. You know, you make the best pick you can at the time you do. And some pan out and some don't.
I mean, certainly that's true for everyone. I just like having a guy who's got a 45% chance to hit on a fourth or fifth round pick as opposed to a 30% chance to hit on a fourth or fifth round pick. Sure. That's the difference in how I kind of see Ozzie and EDC relative to others. I honestly think they've been the most stable franchise in terms of drafting over the last 30 seasons in the entire NFL. There's nobody who's done it with more consistent front office personnel. than the Ozzie / DaCosta regime that's lasted all that time. Every other team has changed GMs. They've had other changes that have gone on in scouting. They've had changes, you know, otherwise that have gone up and down. It's the ultimate trump card. But the only two other teams that are in the same league with the Ravens in terms of drafting quality are two other franchises that we associate with Exxon. It's Green Bay and Pittsburgh.
Right.
And they are consistently, any kind of analysis you do that looks at value relative to draft position order, you're going to come out with those three teams being on top.
Right. You know, the one last point I will make about the later round picks under DaCosta, they've been a lot more transparent post-draft about their process for some of these picks. And if you just look at them in aggregate, since he's taken over, you could make an argument that the best fourth or later round pick they've made is taking Isaiah Likely in the 22 draft. He's probably been – he or Ben Powers have been the two best players they've drafted. But because of the transparency they showed in that 2022 draft, they actually – weren't planning to draft Likely. They took Kolar first, and they had identified the guys they were planning to draft, and they only took Likely because Pittsburgh had taken the shifty quick receiver out of Memphis or Kentucky. I can't remember. Calvin Austin. And so they had to pivot, and they said, well, sure, I guess we'll figure out how to use another tight end. And then it panned out. And so maybe this is, maybe a stretch, but perhaps some of the guys they've targeted haven't been as good as if they were just let the draft fall in a different way. I don't know, but that's just a loose theory based on one draft situation.
Deconstruct too much to find it out. I think if they were quote unquote forced into the Ben Mason pick because he was the last player on their board, my response to that is get a better board. I think there were players on defensive line in particular that was all, about to leave town that would have been reasonable choices there. Could have gotten another nose tackle at that spot. There were other options. And if anybody wants to listen, go back to my draft shows that review the draft afterwards. And I gave a list of players that I wanted in each case ahead of the guys who were drafted, in particular ahead of the Ollie and Leary picks. There are a bunch of players that I would have preferred to have. It is what it is. And 90% of the time, there's no reason to believe that I would know better than Eric DaCosta in terms of a particular draft consideration. So I understand why nobody would really take it to heart there. But the Ben Mason pick in particular is so screwed up beyond belief in terms of what they were trying to accomplish with the fifth round pick there. They had run out of players to draft in a COVID year, and that just wasn't a good place to be. They needed to probably have a little bit of an extended board. And my guess is that going into the 21 draft or going into the draft after Ben Mason, that they probably said to themselves, we need to extend our board. We can't put ourselves in the same position to have our last player be at that point or to have a need pick of that ilk be our choice as far up as the fifth round because we don't have enough players. So we had some need players that were there, but nobody was left on our rated board that we would draft for value still at that point.
Right. Now before we wrap, I just do want to reiterate my and I think our belief that the success in the first round over the last 5 years far outweighs disappointment of some fifth round picks. But
oh, sure. Yeah.
You can always self scout and get better.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I don't, in a lot of ways, it's more possible to get better when you're already pretty good, because you only got a couple things to work on. I don't even know where you start with, Arizona's general manager to talk about, how their drafts aren't working out and, how do you make them better? Well, you're missing on 300 things. You don't have a scouting department. You don't have a system. You're not relativizing things. You don't understand positional value, blah, 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 blah. You know, you come up with 20 reasons why they're not doing it right. And it just ends up being not actionable. And DaCosta only has a couple of things that we've been, you know, marginally frustrated by in our discussion. And I honestly think you could look back the Ozzie years and you could point to it and you could say that he did have some great success in the later rounds, but it's always a hits per at bats thing. And the sample size on DaCosta is very small so far.
Right.
All right. Brett, always great talking football with you. Why don't you tell folks where they can talk football with you online?
Sure. I'm at MC Bradley on Twitter/X.
All right. Outstanding. So anybody else who wants to be on a Film Study Short, I just want to reiterate how simple it is. You actually contacted me yesterday with this idea. The idea has morphed a little bit actually since we talked about it, but since you sent me the original note, but 24 hours roughly, and we're recording this thing. It's an easy process. And what I'm going to tell people is don't beat yourself up over the prep. Okay.
Right.
I'll certainly help you morph this into something interesting. And oftentimes, you know, people want to prep for something that might take an hour and a half to go through. And, you know, Brad was even questioning whether he had enough. And, you know, we're 40 minutes in. We're still talking about this. And we probably could go longer. Don't worry about that is what I'm going to tell you. But have a couple of important, interesting points that you want to make. And that'll generally make a good show. And I really appreciate you doing that, Bradley, and coming on.
Appreciate it, Ken.
All right. Let's see. Anything else to say? I want to thank our loyal listeners again. Great camp numbers, great time. Had a lot of fun there, and I'm glad you guys seem to enjoy the camp reports. Really appreciate that. Regular season's coming up. We're back to our regular schedule starting next week. So two defensive pods, two offensive pods. Know your foe. There'll be a know your foe for the Chiefs game coming up soon. We're bringing back the One Last Thing series with Slava Cooperstein. There's a lot of people like that one. Friday morning GM will still be around. And then a pair of matchup shows per week with Frazier Tafar. So hopefully you'll look forward to those. Introduced a film study to somebody else who doesn't maybe know about it that would like to. Brad, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. And instead, simply go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI on Unlimited Ultimate and Watch or Tap, also on them.
Service plan required for Watch or Tap. Trade in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
Access big savings every day, all in the Kroger app. Get tender Heritage Farm boneless chicken breast for $2.49 a pound. Then find low prices on thousands of items like sparkling ice water, Kroger brand chips, and more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.